there are lots of people who would love to know what our secret sauce is. It's a lot of hard work is what it is. It's 55 years of thinking about how you do it better the next day, over and over and over again.
Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar, and today we have a pretty amazing rig rundown. I'm at the Chicago Music Exchange with Andrew and Daniel, and they're gonna take us through the rig that I grew up listening to that has probably influenced me more than anything. So gentlemen, with no further introduction, tell everybody about this because you know way more than any of us.
So the way you got to go back probably, I think it's probably just prior to COVID. About 2018, 2019, I was going to be in St. Louis for something, and Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses called and said, "What are you doing tonight? You want to go catch a friend's show?" And that show happened to be Skynyrd and Hank Williams.
Wow.
And so we brought our wives and went up to the show, and that was the second time I had the opportunity to hang out with Gary, but that was the first time that Richard introduced me to Ricky Medlock. And so it was a great night, it was a great show, it was a ton of fun. Gary was still in the mix and playing, and I stayed in contact with Ricky Medlock. And Ricky and I ended up doing a pretty cool event with Meekum Auto Auctions, 2019 into 2020. Strangely enough, Ricky wanted to sell a bass boat while we were doing guitars, but that's a whole different party. Yeah. But we had a lot of fun. When Gary passed, I got a phone call, and he said, "Hey, you're going to get a call from Mary and Dale."
This is Richard?
Ricky. No. Richard gets credit for the introduction to Ricky
okay. And
the fun evening, and then Ricky is the guy who called me and said, "Hey, you know, I was talking to Mary and Dale, and all of these things were at the house and just there, and there was no real idea or concept of anything other than they were just the guitars and amps and the cases."
And Mary's Gary's wife?
I'm sorry, I should have started there. Yeah, no. Dale is Gary's wife.
Okay.
Obviously, she has been in the band and with them for decades, and Rossington Collins and everything, and she's amazing and an unbelievable voice. Mary is Gary's daughter.
Oh, okay.
And who called me? And I, first of all, when Ricky said that, I didn't believe for 2 seconds that I was going to get that call. Not a chance. For as long as I've been doing this and for as many cool situations as we've been in, not for 1 second did I think that someone was going to call and be like, "Hey," especially when it pertains to the most iconic thing ever done on a 1961 Gibson Les Paul SG. But Mary called, and Daniel and I got together real quick and got out to Atlanta, and they're two unbelievable, the whole family, salt of the earth people. And it was such a cool experience to walk into this room in the basement of just, okay,
mind blowing.
What now? And we just rolled up our sleeves and started getting in it and getting all of them figured out. And the first step was obviously, wisely, Daniel gets everything organized and tightened up on a spreadsheet so we know exactly what we're looking at. But you start opening cases, and one after another, you're just like, no.
So was it cataloged, or was it just kind of just his stuff?
No, it was just the stuff. One of the coolest parts about Gary is that for everything that you see that he is and does on stage, it just, these things came to him. A lot of, obviously, the biggest stuff, when they weren't the world-famous Skynyrd, and they were in Hell House. I mean, you look at these amps, and they have fucking cigarette burns all over.
Yeah. I love
like
that.
That's from Hell House.
Right.
That's from practice in 110 degree weather in the middle of the Georgia forest, like just craziness. And so as we start mating things, the single coolest part of it we figured out was that over the years, Dale and Gary would just go down to the basement with a little notepad and a pen and open a case. And Gary would say something, you have bad handwriting, so Mary would write, or Dale would write it out. And Gary would sign it. And so you'd be open in these cases, and it would tell you, you know, played Freebird on this every single night. Put it away. Love it. signed.
Retired the guitar after one's tour or whatever.
Yeah. Wow.
Customized by my friend, so on and so forth. Signed dates. Yeah. I mean, just
some
absolute
of them,
problem.
Some of them said, this is a good guitar.
Yeah, they weren't full of detail necessarily, all of them, but it was, again, it was Gary saying, yeah, I used this and this is what I did with it. And but yeah, it was an amazing day of just getting all this stuff put together. And then that's when the real work started, is to try to figure out, because again, there was no ledger, no log, no organized setup. And going back to what I said earlier about how Gary worked with his equipment, wasn't a guitar shop guy, didn't go around looking for stuff, but you'd see that over the years, you know, friends were giving him things. There's some unbelievably cool couple guitars that had kind of gone between Alan and Gary a couple of times, and then ended up back with Gary. Once we started making phone calls, and I sort of tried to figure out who I could trust and who was there, who's still alive, there's a crazy group of really great guys in some of these Skinner forums who just have obsessed with this stuff over the years.
Yeah.
I mean, I got crazy calls where it was like, hey, I have the original Tolex from when these were done in my house. You know, one guy called me and said, I have every single one of the caps that was swapped when they refurbed. I forget if it was the Highwater or the Marshall, but they were able to help us with a handful of things, because each one of these kind of had a specific job and a reason.
And by the way, some of those people are extremely protective. They're like, how did you end up with this?
Oh, yeah. That's like, it's like, that's a good part of the story as well. Yeah. I attempted to sign up to two or three different forums, and I was kind of blocked. And then
when you weren't vetted yet.
Yes.
And by the way, my opening statement when signing up was, hi, my name is Andrew. I own the Chicago Music Exchange. Here's what I'm here for, and here's essentially my intentions.
Yeah, like, Ricky sent me.
Put it right out there.
And he sent us.
Oh, yeah. I am working with the family, and here's what I'm looking to achieve. And nobody was rude. It was just like, whoa, time out.
Yeah.
Because again, these guys really take this stuff very seriously in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And there's a guy that I worked a lot with and deserves credit. His name is Brandon, and he helped me identify some hard dates. Because even when Gibson worked with Gary to put his signature releases together, Bernice is easy. Bernice is super straightforward.
Sure.
Here's Bernice. It's never changed, which is another cool story that Daniel should help participate in telling. But that was the only guitar that we didn't have. Sorry, one of two guitars that we didn't have immediately upon doing this. But in working with him, and you could really get to figure out where each one of these could get placed, the mystery guitar. Working with Brandon.
Yeah, Brandon.
But even in Gibson's case and doing the SG, it's not one. You know, there are very hard dates that you can tie to certain events on these, that they did a thing, or like even really cool stories. Like if you look at the headstock of these two guitars, so you'll see those very noticeable chips in the corner there. One of the ways that you could date the period of these is because Gary had a thing in the early days when Freebird would go to kick in and he'd pull his wire, he'd hit it off the end of the cymbal in the corner.
He
would just literally turn over when he pulled his wire and he'd hit the headstock on the corner of the cymbal. And wisely at some point somebody said, hey man, we could probably stop. Because that didn't carry on into future iterations, but that's how you could mark some of them. Because again, you look at it and you're like, wow, that looks really good, all things considered, for what it did. But that was, again, the fun in working with these guys. There are millions of photographs that you can tie in easily, especially with the distinct tail pieces and the coloring. You could figure it out. But when you start asking, oh, was it refinished? Was it this? And you see the original Nicks still there from him banging cymbal heads.
God.
So, but when Gibson did it, they kind of did a blend, because you have a series of types and tail pieces.
Sure.
But yeah, so once we started getting that down the road, we started talking to Mary and Dale about what's next. And for us, we were both aligned from day one. This was not about what are they worth, what can we sell them for. It was 100% the love of the instruments, the love of Gary, the love of his music, and how we could help them keep the story out there, keep Gary's name in the mix, and get these things in other musicians' hands. there's not a person that walks into this room that doesn't go, no, that's really? And then immediately they have a story. Oh my God, I sat in my bedroom and tried to play this forever. Oh man, I tried to learn that slide for every single time. And so our favorite part, especially in working with Mary and Dale, have them being able to come to a show, see someone else playing it and using it to keep that thing going and out there. I mean, and that was it. That was the whole goal from the start. Understand these things, get them placed and organized, and then work with people to keep Gary's name, Gary's legacy, Gary's music, and these instruments out there.
Wow.
And it was a super emotional thing for everyone, for the family at first. Oh, that first show was very, very emotional when that guitar first started singing those lines, you know, in the hands of Charlie Starr.
I saw that. God.
Yeah.
That, what a killer performance.
That's one of the other things.
I was, you know, side stage with the family, with Mary, and I mean, right there. And it was just, it was one of the most emotional things I've ever been through. And they were like, you just, I felt music in a different way that day.
And Charlie was the perfect choice.
100%. Perfect.
I mean.
100%.
This is a very special night for Blackberry Smoke and for me personally, because Miss Dale Rossington and Mary and Annie brought Gary Rossington's guitar for me to play for you. And for all the years that we've been playing music together, first time we played music, played a show with Skynyrd was in 2002. It's in Dallas, Texas. And this next song, we've never done it before ever because it's sacred. So tonight, with the utmost humility, we tip our hats to Brother Gary Rossington.
That was the other tough part about this. Like, there's no shortage of opportunities to let someone play this. There's no shortage of requests, but every one of them, you got to think about that.
Yeah.
And so that first step, you didn't want it to be anything other than right for the family, right for the instrument, right for the person involved, because, and you could keep this or not, but this is the eternal debate with this. And you're talking to someone about the proposition of them playing it or the request from them and playing it. Am I supposed to pay Freebird? Or can I just play it?
Yeah.
And so that was also kind of the intent. I'm like, no, there's no rush to be like, let's get this to the biggest stage. Let's get this out there. It was just like, let's let this happen organically and see where it goes. I want these things to get out there, because that's one of the funniest parts about this whole deal. When the word got out that we were doing this, every single famous person that called me, 100% of them said, does he still have the Maces? Every single call.
God.
Are the Maces there? Are the Maces there?
Well, it's so great. This Mace over here has his, like, you can see where he marked every setting.
Yeah.
And I was just messing with it a little bit. And
there's an old set list on one of these.
I was going to surprise you with that later. Yeah.
Oh, there, right on. That. Sorry. That.
Yeah. If you think that's cool, you got to see the back of that cab. There's something very cool back there. Yeah. We'll turn it around later. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So many cool. I mean, as we were opening these cases, it was just like so many cool surprises. Of course, all of the notes that were, you know, written by Dale but signed by him were little treasures. But, you know, you could tell, like, which guitars he played and which guitars he didn't, because the guitars that he played had, like, picks and stuff like that in there, and the other ones had, you know, nothing like that.
Yeah, sure.
Even, like, with the... So when we first went into the basement, and obviously there's 100,000 cool stories along the way of doing this, but like when we first went into the basement and everything's out how it is, on the wall was a super rusted string, super dusty Black Squire Strat. on like the wall.
Something you'd think, oh, that's worth $100.
We'll find the gig bag somewhere for it. Yeah, it is what it is. But that was part of what set you up for, wait, time out. That pig nose is important, and here's why. That ES Les Paul is important, and here's why. When it came to the Squire, again, you first walk in there, and you're like, you know what you're identifying. After the years of watching him play and the legacy stuff, you know which guitars you want to make sure that you put hands on. And when it came to that Squire, we ended up finding the note and learning and then seeing content later. Yeah. Like, in the later years, that's the guitar he used to write with his wife. He wrote probably Rossington Collins' most known song with that guitar.
Yeah, never been in.
Okay. No idea going.
Because he was such a humbucker guy, whenever he wanted a single coil sound, that's what he was there. That's what he grabbed. Wow. A Squire Strat.
Wow.
So it's like the most valuable Squire Strat in the history of Squire.
Yeah, you know right. I mean? Yeah. Right. Yeah, combine all of the Squire Strats ever made.
And this is worth more. Yeah. It's priceless.
God, that's great.
Yeah.
We're going to set it up for the family at one of the houses, but the rig that Gary played when he would come home in his Lazy Boy was a pig nose and an ES Les Paul.
Wow.
And a couple like handheld cassette recorders.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how cool. Just to record like riffs.
Yeah.
Wow. I did a TV thing with him 20 years ago, and I was shocked at just how cavalier he was about his gear. I mean, they really were just tools.
Oh, that's it.
We're all around it, like, oh my God, and it's like, oh, yeah. I don't know.
Here, we'll determine.
This one is a good guitar.
Yeah, yeah. I was asking him stuff. He's like, I don't know.
Along the way, again, as we were blocking out certain eras of guitars, the Nashville floods.
Yeah, right.
Skynyrd had gear in the room.
In soundcheck, right.
And so we were identifying, and it was, in some cases, it was obvious what guitars.
So we were opening cases, and I would open up a case and go, okay, this, first of all, there were a few empty cases. I was like, why are there empty cases? And I found, okay, this is an empty case, but this guitar goes to that case, but it's in a gig bag. I opened up the case, and was like, oh, this has water damage. We realized that a bunch of stuff that was in that room was originally in Nashville in storage.
Yeah.
And the family told us about, I mean, you could tell the story about when the flood happened.
Well, where I was going with that is that when we're digging in on these and identify them, I wanted to know who worked on them then. And so I would call them.
Oh, this is crazy.
And guy was cool. He obviously knew me and knew us and everything. And he's like, well, that was a weird one. Why was it a weird one? Well, Gary called me once I told him what was wrong with it. And he's like, no, I'm gonna send you the parts to use. I'm gonna send the parts to use. And so he's thinking, all right, I'm gonna get these, you know,
vintage
iconic box from Gary. Fuck no. It was like off-brand pickups and like Ibanez tailpiece and stuff like that.
Really?
Gary just sent him a box of parts, being like, well, they're guitar parts.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
Put the guitar with those guitar parts.
Take your pick.
Good. Yeah. And he goes, there's no way I was going to do that. And he's like, and I opened up the back of it. It had custom pots and really nice caps and everything. And he's like, Gary, man. I wanted to give him my best.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and even when we were going through the wardrobe when we first got it, there was a box in the bottom of it of quite literally parts that had nothing to do with any of the guitars that he plays. So I have no idea how he got those.
Yeah.
I don't know if his tech was just like making a box and keeping it in. Yeah. I don't know. But
I think just like how we all got our shit that...
Yeah.
I think that was just his. Yeah. He just is an icon. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Hey, did that... Is that his hat?
Yeah, that's
good. Wow.
There's that. So that was in
that's
the wardrobe.
Perfect.
A wardrobe was one of the one or two wardrobes. One wardrobe.
One
wardrobe when we
it's upstairs.
First organized
we'll
everything. And again, the two guitars that weren't there. It was obvious. Obviously, Bernice wasn't there. We knew that was at the Rock Hall, but there was this mystery around a missing SG. Now, a majority, I'd argue probably 99% of all the photographs are basically these three guitars. The later years, you get the custom shop. There is a hard line. When Gary had the surgery, there's a hard line, basically. That's when Gibson Custom Shop were like, all right, we're going. And they did Bernice. And then they did the Rossington SG. And at that point was when he had come out of that. The Rock Hall was like, hey, we'd love to. And so they were given Bernice. It turns out they were actually given two guitars at the time. And that's this guitar in this case, which we should definitely talk about and probably go into a little detail on. But we had to work with the Rock Hall. It took a while to get everything organized. We did go to the Rock Hall, and we fully went through Bernice. Opened it up, white glove, four people in a room, like everything being photographed. And what's super crazy and unbelievable about it is that it still has all its original stuff. It still has its PAFs. Wow. It still has everything that you would have assumed.
Minus the tuners, which is unknown.
Yeah. But it was...
Did he put Grovers on it? Or
no,
he had that gold tuner, the tulip that he would do.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And actually, we have another guitar here. I think
it has the same tuners that the reissue has. We have his prototype of the reissue right there, which we can look at later. Yeah. And it has these, square tip tuners. It's not a Grover with that like a bean, a rounded shape.
He liked the gold parts. Bernice has the gold parts on it. Yeah. So, but yeah, it had it. I mean, I couldn't believe that that guitar, for as long as it was played every night,
right
up until that hard stop. I mean, he didn't have the SG thing. Totally get. And anyone would understand. SGs, when you're touring them, they're going to break. They're going to heel crack. They're going to this.
Especially those 61s.
Yes.
Like, I mean, you can look at one and the headstock will break.
Yes. And so having multiple SGs totally makes sense for Gary and what he was doing. You kind of assume going into it that there would be this series of backup Les Pauls. There were only two actual backup Les Pauls, one really, and a testament to Bernice, testament to Gary and I don't know, but didn't exist. Bernice was the workhorse. And so when you talk about iconic Les Pauls and who used them, Gary's right up there at the top. What he did with that instrument every fucking night, the songs they wrote with it, the sounds that are recorded.
Right.
And so we worked with them. We got all that documented. We are going to do something with them in the future where we have the collection together and that instrument will get out again. But there was another guitar there and it took a while to get to the bottom of it and to even start to get photos of it from them. And when we initially got the photos, it was kind of weird because he and I looked at each other like, I don't recognize that guitar. And so I went to the forum guys. I went to Brandon and talked to other people along with the crazy archive that we had put together and tried to find it, and we couldn't. And the kicker was that Gary walked in that door of the Rock Hall and he said, and here's the Freebird SG. And so I know, that guitar is the, 300 million YouTube views, 1977, a month before the plane crash, last show, that's the fucking guitar. That's the guitar that he played. These guys are every single photo otherwise. Every single other concert are these. So first off the wall is this beaut, and this color and this tailpiece made it super easy to identify really early. I'm drawing a blank on the exact date, but there's a really cool outdoor high school age band photo.
Really?
The high watt is there. And this guitar, and it had faded pretty early. And so, you could see that in photos.
Well,
and
even really in the old
very
photos,
early.
Still
a
lighter.
And so
shade.
This one had been around and worked. And again, like we had talked about with nicking on headstocks, this guitar has been through the ringer. It actually has had replaced pickups done, some repairs, but it made it all the way through to Rossington Collins. And then early parts, this was the first one to be, let's call it retired for whatever reason it was. I couldn't tell you exactly why, but super early start on this one, pre-Skinnerd, into Hell House, into Skinnerd.
Wow.
And then you start to see that one come in a little bit later. It was obviously super easy when you have that red and then this fade.
Sure, and the different tailpiece.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
So is this a 61?
This is a 62, right?
61.
I can't see it. Okay. Yeah. One? Okay. Yeah, 61.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, duh, because the two and then...
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but again, super, super nice to play, super easy to play. The whole thing's still there. You could plug it in today and pull the same tones right out of it.
Wow.
It's kind of nuts. But yeah, this was probably the earliest in terms of photos of this style with the full nut width
well
and all that. But yeah.
love the Grovers, that they would have, you know, all those guys.
He changed, I'd say, just about every, actually 100% of the guitars have changed tuners.
Yeah.
He loved the heavier tuners,
yeah.
More specifically tulip tips, most of the time gold. He didn't do any of the gold stuff.
If there's a guitar of his that we have that doesn't have changed tuners, it's probably one that he didn't like or didn't play.
That's right, right. Yeah. Yeah, and all this stuff just, to me, makes it even just that much cooler.
Oh, 100%.
It's the, you know, his hands on it.
But see, that's also what's funny about it. Wasn't chasing guitars, wasn't going after one thing, but he wanted tuners. And
pragmatic.
Then look at the Les Paul. He wanted gold parts. Like, yeah. I love that. So.
Yeah, and like, this is just a pragmatic decision for a working musician.
Keep it going, stay in tune, let's go.
God, did that big chunk right there,
That one got it a lot worse, which we'll get to in a second. And I know that some of them have been touched up, even in the damage, but again, and you guys can get shots of it, that was where, you know, switch of the song, pull the wire, bang on the, and right on.
We haven't
on.
Talked about the wire yet.
In this whole thing. Like the origination.
People know
of
about
it?
The wire, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've heard, okay,
the green wire, which I have an original green wire of his and an original slide back here so we can pull them out.
Oh, really? The Cordis Eden Vaughn?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, the rock and roll lore was that it was either a wire or a screwdriver. And through there, I didn't realize he would pull it out.
So. It's both, but not for show every night purposes. I mean, in originally trying to figure it out, and obviously Gary's told the story, like, screwdriver was handy and there it goes. There was no other thought process to it. And then the original green wire, it just worked perfect for what he needed, and he could just pull it right back.
So this is obviously a new case.
Yeah.
SG number 2. So it's one of the last ones that he played. But the reason why I wanted to show this to you is because when we opened the case, this is how it was.
Oh, okay. So was it tuned?
And technically, just that was the presentation of the Gibson Custom Shop when they were released. And so we kept that one with it. Gary's would basically, they were a little bit shorter than that, the originals that we have. And it's enough to grab a nib
and
rip it
out.
And
that's a Corsini?
That is the slide that Gary used, yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. God.
And so the last show, the Ryman show, this was the guitar. So you're actually probably holding the last guitar that Gary played.
We haven't changed those strings.
We have not changed the strings.
So is it tuned G?
You know, I don't know.
Because he...
Oh, I don't know if that thing's going to be in tune at this point. Or what tune
standard,
is.
Well, right?
Yeah, it's in standard. But what he would do is E-A-D-G-G-E.
Right. Yeah.
And would do it all on those two for that. You can't get that sound any other way.
Right.
And nobody else has ever thought of that. It's so... Yeah, God, what a genius, man.
SG Master.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to lose consciousness.
We probably shouldn't do that.
Let me hand it over before I fall over.
This one actually is my favorite from a guitar standpoint. This guitar does still have its original PAS in it. So it's the one of all the working SGs that retained them. This one's kind of like, to me, a perfect example of if you were to do a Gary Ross, a signature S, this is it. It has a little bits of all the parts of the decades of him playing. The hard cymbal marks from knocking it out. When you look at the fretboard, you can see the wear in it from where the wire going in and out.
Yeah.
It's got the original setup as a 61 would. It has its original PAFs. It's got some cracks and breaks and issues because it was a fucking workhorse, badass guitar. And it sounds incredible.
Everybody agrees when they plug all these in that it just sounds awesome.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one that Charlie played.
Right.
Because when we were talking about, like, okay, well, do you offer people the opportunity to choose? And because the other ones, that's a very distinct thing. Smaller nut, later 60s, totally different guitar altogether. Or, you know, when you close your eyes and you see those shows in the 70s, you picture this thing. But this instrument
the
carried
deep
through.
Red?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy how...
No idea how it did it. None.
Yeah.
None.
How
no idea.
The arbitrariness of time, like one gets, you know, washed out, one stays
But that was red. One of the other cooler parts. It was so easy to identify.
Yeah.
You saw Rossington Collins shows with it. You saw Reunion when they got back together. You knew that it was this guitar.
Maybe they played in their younger years, they played more outdoors shows, and then eventually it was more enclosed, larger venues, less sun. I mean,
You're right. And just the heat of the Hell House.
Right.
I mean,
could have very well baked it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Could have baked it.
Yeah.
And a lot of cigarette smoke.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of smoke. Hey, everybody. I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario's been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns. And they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points, or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns.
One of the things, I think one of the reasons why he eventually switched to this one is because it just sounds so good.
Right.
And that's ultimately really mattered to him. Does it feel good? Does it sound good? It's like, oh, wow, this one sounds really good. Retired.
Oh, yeah.
Switched to this one.
I honestly, I think that's kind of one of the other reasons why there weren't backup Les Pauls. I mean, how are you going to beat Bernice? And that Gary's tone in those.
Now, the irony is that later there were backup Les Pauls in like the 80s or whatever. We have several 80s and early 90s Les Pauls before he needed lighter instruments that were considered backups. But yeah, during the Bernice era, much, much later, there was a backup. But early on, there were several SGs, but that was the Les Paul.
He had one Les Paul that he had totally refinished. Started as a deluxe gold top, right?
Yeah,
started as a late 60s deluxe gold top. Had it refinished into a burst, but that was for the specific tuning guitar, right?
Yeah.
And it was the only other guitar he named, and they say it's been named Dottie, which was his grandmother's name, but I don't, there's no other documentation than that one letter from him and sparse photographs of it being used. It looks like it was used for specific songs.
So much to try to really nail it down and figure it out. And some of these are so well documented and so obvious. And some of them are just a mystery, which is such a pain.
I wanted to be able to put a stamp on all this stuff and knowing how many you can't even call them backup because they all did their part in servicing his SG needs, which is, again, it's crazy. It's Freebird, but it's so important. Bernice was the guitar. I mean, it did.
And one really cool thing about Bernice is that when we were at the Rock Hall, we asked what case is it in? And both guitars that were at the Rock Hall were in this kind of white road case, right, with that stencil on it. But when we were going through the their basement originally on that first phone call, the first time there, I was like, that is a 5-latch brown case right there. And I went to grab it, and I was like, it's empty. And I thought, oh my God, this is Bernice's original case.
Yeah.
Because it's in Rock
Makes
Hall,
sense. Yeah.
In that, because it was in the bus or whatever, and it was easier to, safer to ship or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But that, it's right behind you. Bernice's original case is right there.
Yeah. So, again, this is my favorite. This is my favorite to play of all these guitars. This is my favorite the way it sounds. It's the instrument that we have had, that artists have had wanted, that have wanted to play, use. Joe Bonamassa was the last to play it out in live, and I had wanted that to happen sooner along the way, but just with scheduling and everything else,
busy guy.
The family was one of the people involved in asking me about Joe getting the chance to play it.
Oh, cool.
I didn't realize the history between the two of them. I called Joe. He opened for them when he was significantly younger and had a funny story about a late night hotel room party on the road Skinner had their wing of the hotel, and the party was going, and Joe was just trying to sneak out of his room and make it to the Coke machine to buy himself half a dozen Cokes and run back to his room.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he said, I felt this presence, and here comes Gary down the hallway from the party and started yelling at him, didn't realize who it was, and it ended up in a hilarious exchange. But
I didn't know this.
Yes, yes. And so Joe played this. The family was super happy. It was an awesome night. And so this is the guitar that, as we work with other artists, that they'd get to play.
See, I would love to have heard the exchange of a young
I'll let Joe give you the full layout. But it is everything you could imagine with Skinner out there getting after it on the road,
yeah,
and young Joe.
A young kid.
Yep, opening for Skinner. So,
yeah.
So.
Thrown to the wolves.
Yes, exactly. So.
Look at this. Look up there on that binding right there. That symbol went in so deep.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the spot where, look, you're pulling the wire out. You're trying to get the screwdriver in there. But that's, again, why this one is my favorite. It checks all the boxes from the issues, the good, the use. I mean, that is a fucking symbol.
Yeah.
Let's go. The song's kicking in.
Right.
And Gary in the mix.
You know, I would think when you're going, I imagine they pull out the wire on Lord, I Can't Change as it starts transitioning. But that the tuning would hunker in.
I still don't understand that.
We've all talked about this.
Yes.
Yeah.
The intonation, you're introducing something, changing the intonation. Obviously, you're playing slide, so it doesn't really matter. You're just kind of listening. But then you pull it out, and it's like, what is it?
I think one of the things he did, he stuck to a lot to 1 and 5.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was that huge sound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's true. So he got away with it.
The voicing was
plus
probably
with all of those layers, maybe a little bit of it being out of tune. It was rock and roll. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
And two G's.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Which one of them is hard enough to keep in tune as a hit. Yeah.
You know? Right.
This guitar is the guitar for all the big YouTube videos, the hundreds of millions of views, that concert just before the plane crash. So this is the last guitar that he played before the plane crash. Total different model style from the early small nut, different tuners, different pickups, obviously the bridge. But strangely enough, post-plane crash, this became a pretty regular guitar. And obviously, everybody has their opinion on the different nut width sizes and whether they like them or not. He just naturally rolled into it.
Yeah.
And so as that one faded out, these two were the main guitars on the road all the way through right up until 03-ish when the full custom shop conversion went. And this guitar, when we found it, was in one of the Rossington Collins road cases.
Yep. With a note saying, you know, played Freebird on this, you know, every day, retired it in, I can't remember the year, and that's all it said.
And what year is this?
So, it's an interesting guitar because it has some mixed appointments and obviously some changed parts and whatnot. And the harmonica bridge, which is original, by the way, a lot of people think that's what was added or whatever. We have it, we've dated it. Let me see what we have it. Yeah, we have it as a 66. I think it might be a 67. There is no
straight serial number
super
line.
Super concrete way to be absolutely certain. It's obviously post 65, pre 69, so it can only be within that date range.
Right.
Yeah.
It is like archaeology.
One of my favorite parts of the whole process.
Yeah.
And because he was such a utilitarian player, if pots went bad, they would swap them all.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the most dateable things in a Gibson is gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because serial alone with a Gibson, especially during this era, does not nail down when it's from. you have to date it by appointments, and the pot dates are a huge factor.
Yeah, wow. And as you can see, this thing's seen the road. Cracks, oh, yeah. Breaks, usage, respray. I mean, this thing, but again, this is the guitar, the last one before the plane crash that did the Freebird thing.
Wow.
And I think that he started using this because, this is just a theory, completely like unsubstantiated by anything. I think that after spending some time with these and plugging them in, these hotter pickups started sounding better to him with his live rig than the older PAFs. And so exclusively because of that.
Probably a little less microphonic too.
Yes, exactly. That in fact, would... you noticed how when you plugged that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, exactly. Less microphonic, huge, yeah. I mean, wall of maces in the back.
Oh God.
This just became a guitar that was more manageable.
And the setting on that mace, I couldn't, I've got, you know, the post is, he's marked it where it's way up there. I just barely cracked it, and it's frighteningly loud. But yeah. Man, at full in full flight, at his volume where he would where he'd preset it, I can't imagine how
loud
that was.
It must have been painful and transcendental.
Oh yeah, 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 and a long cable.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I forget, I don't have it in front of me, but obviously Gary, with his relationships with Marshall and PV and PV and PV and PV, amps switched throughout time.
So yeah, Marshall and the Mississippi
different guitars
Marshall.
Played into what would play for him. But
yeah. As far as amps go, there's some really cool stuff upstairs that we'll show you later on. You can get some B-roll or whatever, but it's we have some of the later rigs that he played, and you can just see the evolution from, you know, from the Mace, you know, stuff from the Marshall and Hi-Watt to the Mace to the later stuff, which is also super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, those amps, honestly, when we were in the house, I just thought that they were newer amps that he had acquired. It was the forum guys who were like, no. Wow. Those were Retolexed. Here's the date. Here's the guy who did it. Here's why.
And did you say the guy saved the original Tolex?
Oh, yeah. I was offered the original. So there's more maces upstairs. One of them has no chassis in it, but they saved it.
Wow. Like,
and they were worse, significantly worse with cigarette butts. Where's the other one?
It's upstairs.
Oh, okay. Like, I thought, I was like, wow, that's bad enough to be told that it was even worse, that they had to redo it. Was
that's the
like,
improved version.
And to be honest with you, I would have saved it. Like, knowing, I would have framed that piece in the cigarette butt.
Yeah, right.
On top. So, but yeah, last guitar that he played. So,
wow.
This guitar, and John, you will have to hold this in a second after I explain a couple of things. But so this guitar looks much more like, oh, okay, so this is a road guitar. This has been out there. This was a guitar that was at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Gary brought this guitar to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and said, here's the Freebird SG. When we got the photos, I sent them to him and was immediately like, I've never seen this guitar. Like, and I had seen, let's just say thousands, I'll be nice, not tens of thousands of photos of these guitars, identifying, dating, and trying to figure out what guitar they thought they had. And so we got the photos, couldn't identify it, went through the process, we went to Cleveland, did the whole deal, left with the guitar. So when I got back, after just kind of throwing in the towel, being like, okay, I can't find this guitar, hit the forum guys. At the same time, I reached back out to Joe Bonamassa and a couple other people, and I said, hey, I got to talk to Al Cooper. I want to talk about those first sessions. Do you have photos? Any chance you remember And I talked to him, and we went back and forth, and it was a funny exchange.
With Al Kooper?
Yeah, and he did say, oh, man, I got drawers full of photos. And then he didn't say anything. And I'm like, Al, I will come to your house. I will clean these drawers of photos. I just, do you remember what guitar? No, man, no way I remember. And he did not let me come to his house and and go through the photos. But the belief is that. So this is a, and you'll see, this is a very heavy guitar. And super identifiable. This is not what the wood on normal 61 SGs.
Yeah.
The figuring is super unique. Again, I'm not name dropping, but going back to calling Joe and saying, hey, have you seen? I talked to Matt Kaler at Gibson, and there was a small period of 61s that got this wood. It's not common. It is known. There are others. And the belief is that this is what he used to record it with. And because it was heavy, he didn't want to tour it.
Because these ones are so light.
Super light.
Hold this.
And Gary did not like heavy guitars. And so,
oh, yeah. This is like
distinctly different. Yep.
Wow.
And for Gary to say that,
right,
and to bring it to them, this is not something that just made it into his orbit in the 90s. Like, no. That guitar had been in his possession. And so we're still working on hopefully being able to get, you know, photographs from the studio, from the recording
sessions.
I think
if we ever see pictures of that session, we will see this guitar. But everything else that is, you know, photographed,
yeah,
live or whatever,
everything,
is not this guitar.
Nope.
Even from this era, from this, the moment when this was recorded originally.
Wow. Have you seen Mahogany with that kind of...
No. That's
I have thing. A few times with SGs only from that era.
Wow, because it almost has like maple type characteristics,
yeah,
in,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
Here, please, it makes me, yeah, yeah.
So it was fun, and then, yeah, when you find out that's and there's never been a part of like a hard no on why it wouldn't be, and for Gary to deliver it, it makes a lot of sense.
And it makes sense that if he's going to donate a guitar, make it one he doesn't really want to play.
Yeah.
Because it's too heavy.
And, yeah, and the one. You know,
and the historical significance.
Well,
right,
and I don't think there's anything wrong in saying this. It's just obvious. Gary didn't wake up in the morning and worry about what the value of his guitar collection was.
Right. It just
and
is
in the early 2000s, stuff. It was becoming very obvious how expensive bursts were. And he's just out on the road flinging it around. And so he did not... Once he found out what that guitar was worth,
I bet it wasn't even him. I bet it was like the dudes on the side that were like,
oh,
"Dude, you should
retire."
What are
you
doing? Very well, very well could have been.
Yeah.
But ultimately, with the value of where it was going, is then Rock Hall was going to secure and insure it, and so on and so forth. And Gary knew he was getting the custom shop guitars, and so I think that then in the same line of thinking, well, wow, if that's that expensive, this recorded Freebird, and it's again vintage guitar, and so it went into the Rock Hall where it was sat for, you know, 22, 23 years until we came through.
God.
So briefly, I think this one, I know that Dwayne's Gold Top and Gary's Burst were on a display together for Southern Rock, which meant the world to Gary, because obviously his use of the Corsiden bottle comes directly from Dwayne and staring and playing the same things as him. And so, but yeah, it was quite possibly the guitar that is the sound that we all listen to.
Yeah, this, this
isn't
is the
that
guitar.
Amazing?
Yeah.
You know, it's when we did a rig rundown with Don Felder, he was talking about how in that little part of Florida where they're all meeting up, like Dwayne brought it to everybody, you know, brought this whole kind of course seating thing, and the, like, that's where Joe Walsh got it, that's where Don Felder got it, and that's where apparently the Skinner guys.
I got to be honest with you, I didn't know this story, and I just sent them the video. I don't know if it's serendipitous to shooting this, but Greg telling a story about 15, 18 years ago in an interview was talking about why he even did that in the first place. And I'd heard versions of it before, but to hear Greg tell it, like, his brother was pissed at him, hadn't talked to him for 6 weeks because he tried to take him horseback riding, warned him that the horse was shod and that if he got on the road, he was going to slip, and Dwayne fell and cracked his elbow and couldn't play.
Right.
And he blamed his brother. And so he didn't talk to him, wouldn't let him in the house for 6 weeks. And so Greg's like, it was his birthday. I went and I bought him a Taj Mahal record and I bought him a bottle of Corsiden because he was sick and his elbow hurt.
Yeah.
And he said, I wrapped it up and I left it on the doorstep and I ran away. And he said, a couple hours later, I get a phone call and he calls him, Babe bro, get over here right now. And Greg's like, he hadn't been talking to me for 6 weeks. So I ran over to the house and I walked in. He goes, look at this. And he goes, the pills were all thrown out on the floor and he washed the label off the bottle and he just started doing it. And Greg's like, he was already doing it. Like he, right there, like it just clicked for him.
Like and where so, have you been in my, all
yeah,
my life?
And, yeah. And of course, the first thing I'm thinking about is, and then that's how it gets to Gary. Like, but yeah. that's a fucking cool rock and roll story.
Oh yeah.
For that to come together.
Joe Walsh told me that same thing, that he was talking to Brother Duane and he told him about it. And so Walsh went to buy some Corsita models, and the pharmacist was reluctant to sell them. He goes, oh no, you can keep the pills. I just want the bottles.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, I love that. God, that is so cool, man.
Yeah, so hopefully we get some photos and I get to figure that out. Because again, what I'd love to know is what, I mean, this thing was clearly played before it did the thing for Gary.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah.
Wow. That's yeah, it. I bet Al Cooper has that photo 100%. Somewhere.
100%. And maybe because of this, Al, you will reach Al. Back out.
Yeah.
We want those
on,
pictures.
Al. Get back into your email. Come on. Yeah. We'll clean up the drawers, whatever.
Wow, right. Man.
I secretly want to believe that that is Karina under there, so maybe that's why it has some of that figuring.
Well.
But I think that's just...
Karina stained like...
Yeah, it could be.
We definitely know we can have an autopsy.
Yeah. And no, so. But I've already looked everywhere. It's not.
No proof.
No.
Yeah. No. Yeah. But anyways, that's wow. That's the mystery one.
Wow.
Or is it not a mystery?
It's up to Al apparently.
Yeah. Okay, what is this?
So these two guitars represent the Gary's last gig. And so the Ryman, that last show that they did, SG, Gary had two touring custom shop SGs that he ran with.
Yeah.
And then this is Bernice, prototype one.
Wow.
And so this was the guitar that they made for him. Right out the gate, 2003-ish, and you can see all of his favorite appointments. And again, since we went and actually went through the real Bernice, gold parts, gold Schallers.
How close is it, having seen the real one?
I've seen a lot of Bernices, and this prototype, and I've obviously seen the real one. I've took the original one apart.
Yeah.
This is really close.
Yeah.
It's really close, yeah.
And it's got Gary's DNA in it. You could literally clone Gary from the stuff in this room.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
I got it.
Do you guys got the technology to clone Gary?
I don't personally yet, but I got to be honest with you, of all the vintage guitars and vintage bursts and everything that I've had handled, played, owned, Bernice checks every single box as an instrument, as a looker, as a feel. Yeah. Like the whole thing is softened from 50 years of being played and used and sweat on, and it's aged in all the right reasons. And I love aged gold parts.
It's
they have a look to them.
Balanced. Oh, right.
It's crazy.
It's resonant. Crazy.
Well, I mean, I think that's the song. I think that's the guitar, the Mr. Banker. Yeah, right. No, I get it.
It was such a cool experience, even though it was weird with white gloves and people.
When we opened the case,
he and I are both looking at each other like two little kids.
Can you take this apart? And so we want to find out what's going on inside. I was like, oh, sure. Give me a screwdriver. Here I go. You know, it's like, yeah.
Because I think their song Mr. Banker was about Bernice, you know, the song. Deep Tracks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Because it's a song about, he's got to bury his father, and all he's got for collaterals is 59 Les Paul.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. I kind of feel like crying talking about it.
That's heavy, man.
Yeah, it is heavy, man.
Wow.
Yeah. I think that was what was so amazing about Skynyrd is it was like every man poetry.
Yeah,
and
real as shit.
Yeah, it's real shit, and the way those guitars work together, it just, oh God, man.
People don't connect. Look, when the plane crash happened, the photo was taken, and what they occurred, they were not some world, famous, wealthy rock stars. They were, it was a working man's band. Those songs,
nothing
the
fancy.
Writings, like, it's hard, it's in the mix, it's fast, it's fucking good times, it's just like, bam. And so, of course it had to come back. Of course it had to be brought back in one way or another. But that snapshot of what they were prior to the plane crash was still a working man's band becoming big.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Like, and so what we know or what people know or think of Skynyrd and what they are, they eventually became in the iteration that was post plane crash. But that early stuff, those songs that they wrote, they're still knuckle on the road, playing the gigs, packing up. Let's go next.
Yeah.
Next.
The work ethic, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard living, hard playing.
Yeah.
Let's go. Where are those guys at today?
Yeah, huh? What is more rock and roll than that?
Hey, if you're watching this video, go back, watch that stuff, start a band.
Right.
SG, Les Paul, big amps.
Let's go.
Right out of the case, a note. Here, you read it.
Okay. First prototype of the reproduction of the signature Bernice, presented to Gary by Rick Campbell's of Gibson, picture of the day. Wow, and Gary signed it.
Yep. So Dale would write him out, and Gail would put his Gary would put his signature at the bottom.
Wow.
I should say that. Shout out Rick Gembar.
Rick
loved Gary, and spearheaded all of his stuff.
He knew that Gary sold them a lot of guitars.
Oh yeah. Yes.
I mean, man.
Yep.
God, isn't that sweet? Just that husband and wife partnership.
About
relationship.
Yeah, but
when you hear Dale talking about it, it's like, it's incredible.
Shout out Dale, man. Badass voice, badass singer.
Oh,
like,
man.
Amazing. You had no idea. Looking at those videos, seeing her sing and later on.
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
Yeah, oh, with Rosalind Collins?
Voice.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's so modest about it. She's like, oh, I don't know. It's like, come on. You know you're a badass.
That is so sweet.
Talking about the later years, right? And one of the things is that Gary he could not play heavier guitars anymore, so they had to be light. And you can speak more about that.
Yeah, and Rick had a great relationship with a handful of guys of that era, like Dickie. And so he got a group together, put a bunch of guys together. The idea was the Heart of Dixie guitar, where they were gonna do a specific burst to it. And we obviously knew there was a big show at Gibson. The guys all came out, had a big jam and played.
Yeah.
And then the main guys that are all named here in one way or another, Marshall Tucker Band guys, Charlie Daniels Band, they played the gig, and Rick quietly made Gary's the first that I know of to be sold, chambered Les Paul.
Really?
And so we didn't know that. There's no note about it. And then when we got it and opened the case and you pick it up and you'll see now, you can trade.
Unbelievably light. I've never held one like this.
Wow.
Gary played it at the gig. Obviously a gorgeous guitar. He picked a nice piece of wood for Gary's.
That is shocking. So this is like hollow.
That is hollow.
It's hollow.
It's not just chambered. It is like there.
Wow. He wanted Gary to be able to play it, and kudos Rick Gembar, put it together.
Oh, that's G. Rosington. That is so great.
And you know what's actually even cooler about it is that there are a couple well-known touring artists who play the Heart of Dixie model and swear it is their best newer model custom shop Les Paul.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when did they put these out? What year was this?
So it's got to be, I'm thinking 14, 13, 14. Sounds right in my head.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's about 15 latest, maybe.
Was this at 12th and Porter where they did that release? Do you remember in Nashville?
This was not the old. This was the 2010s Gibson Custom Shop in the lot. Yeah.
Wow.
Built the stage out, did the jam.
How cool.
Serial number 20.
Huh.
And serial number artist proof.
Oh.
So this is the stuff that came with it. It was such hard work to figure out which guitar went with what case, because a lot of these cases look the same.
Oh.
Well, this one obviously is very unique, but some of the stuff ended up in the wrong cases.
Oh, sure. I mean, well, like, I don't know. I imagine that's what, like at my home, that's what it's like. I imagine it's like you guys too. Your stuff just...
Well, I have a bit of a problem since I'm in the business. So no, I tend to obsessively go, where's the case?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're a little more dialed in.
Keep the two of them mated. Yes.
How funny that is. That's crazy.
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is called the Heart of Dixie.
Yep.
I wonder how many they made. I've never...
Well, there were... I'm not going to get this right, but I think that there were 10, more than 10 artists. But with all of those releases through the custom shop at the time, there would have been...
I
think that there would have been, they wouldn't have done an aged model of this. So it's probably somewhere less than 100 guitars, maybe 50 guitars.
I have no idea.
Max.
Wow.
At that time, it was the collector's choice era, obviously.
Yeah.
And so everything was pretty tightly limited to organized groups. And I don't think they did aged Heart of Dixies. I think it was specifically supposed to be a nice new guitar with a very specific paint to it.
Yeah, all of the Les Pauls of the latter part, all weight relieved like this. So you pick them up, they're all upstairs in a physical vault.
Okay, so how many instruments and amps do you have?
It's a very good question.
I think the total number of items for him was 150.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, man.
Yeah, yeah, but again, didn't get rid of anything. We have his first guitar. We have Gary's first ever guitar, which was a silver tone amp guitar combo, the suitcase one.
No!
Yeah, yeah. Because it became so fragile, at some point, I can't remember, there might have been a note. Somebody either gifted him another one or they acquired a second one. But his original first ever guitar was that silver tone suitcase guitar amp combo. And we have it upstairs.
So all this stuff is for sale?
No, none of it is for sale. No. This is preservation. This is preservation.
Wow.
No. This is keeping things moving forward. Even the stuff that Gary didn't play were not something. They were Gary's. They're the family's.
Wow.
I mean, and there's gifts in there. There's custom shop, really ornate custom shop Telecasters.
Yeah.
There's
it's so
some,
funny. Hundreds of Gibsons.
Yeah.
Two or three Fenders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two or three.
Including his favorite like really cheap Squire that he used in recordings at home. Yeah.
He's got a black 335 that, I mean,
I want that. We want that. It's just a 90s, like, but...
It was played. I can't find where yet, but it was 100%
played. There's still some mysteries. We spent so long.
Jim Beam, Les Pauls. Yeah. They had that concert tour that they were running with Jim Beam, and so there's multiple Jim Beam, Les Pauls.
There's a few Epiphone gold tops. Epiphone, they did a Skinner like reissue gold top. We have a few of those that are signed by all of the bands. At some point in time, we're talking about the family may want to sell them for charity or figure something. Nothing is for sale.
Donate them for charity. There's an Atlanta charity that we work with that we've looked at doing part of this with. But again, fitting it right within the context of Gary's music and what they wrote. I'm sitting here, I'm trying to think of some other like offshoot things. Not a lot of acoustics. Obviously a lot of PV amplifiers, different eras of PV amplifiers.
Couple PV guitars.
Then obviously the Dobro.
Right, the Dobro, which we haven't really talked
Curtis
about.
Curtis Lowe, man.
No, yeah, the Curtis Lowe Dobro, which also has a solo segment with him and Dale.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a video that they used that guitar together in.
It's incredible to see it all together like this, right?
Well, I mean, there's even more that we secure upstairs.
Wow.
Yeah, and now that I think about it too, when we talked about it earlier, that segment of the Les Pauls that were lightened for him in the 2000s outside of the Bernice Proto.
Some of the later Les Pauls have like Axis heels. Just ergonomically, they were making them as comfortable for him to play.
I think Gary and Rick just stayed in touch. Once he realized that they could make him hollowed out guitars, and he could do the thing, it was like, well, okay, let's do that again. There is that interesting one, you're right, that has the Axis cut.
Yeah, they were trying different things to kind of figure out what felt comfortable to him and what he could stand up there for hours and still, you know, do. And you can tell that Gibson was working with them to try to make things as accessible as possible.
You know, it's incredible, too, because once they refired up, you know, the band, they never stopped, man.
Yeah. No.
I mean, they...
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Hard
and,
working.
And, you know, new blood, Ricky. Love Ricky.
Yeah.
Ricky's an amazing cat. I love everything I've ever done with him. He's... The reason that this all came together, you can't see Ricky and not be like, okay, so he's in a band.
And if you've
ever heard it, then you're like, that's the guy. There was a funny time where I had gone to Las Vegas for Gibbons was playing a show, and I had gone out there with them to go to Kings of Chaos. And I was sitting in the audience waiting for them about to go on. And you kind of felt like something, like a rustle in the crowd. And this was House of Blues, Las Vegas. And I just turn, and it's just Medlock making his way down the line in the crowd.
You're just like,
let's go. And he just makes his way up to the front, flowing.
Oh, man.
He's awesome.
He's a presence.
Oh, yeah, Yeah, those guys, I think guys like that, they just kind of resonate at a higher frequency.
Yeah, and you have him on a stage with the Explorer doing the thing.
Oh, God.
Skinner keeps going. And actually, I should kudos to Johnny's a great guy. You know, the first time I met Gary was with Johnny as well.
Yeah. Salt of the earth, man.
Absolutely fantastic.
Humble, amazing guy.
He stepped in and I loved when we were doing our research and again, placing eras and stuff, people don't remember when he refused to sing the song. Like he wasn't going to sing.
Right.
It was microphone out there on the stage with a light. I can't do that.
Yeah.
And so much reverence for his brother and everything along the way. And when it finally started happening, it was natural. And you see, even in their performances today, like that song is a fucking presentation for Gary. What he did with that instrument, even from the chirps to the beginning,
like
SG is a thing today. And anyone who picked it up post, and then obviously Morph picked it up because of that, but he furthered that thing like nobody else.
Yeah.
I don't know why he chose that one. Who knows how that came together, but he never played that part on another guitar.
Yeah.
It probably could be as simple as it just had higher action.
Yeah, so at the time, right. Who knows?
Slide guitar.
Who knows?
All right.
But it was there's never played on another guitar. And yeah. Everybody
God, I wish I could ask thinks of that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool, though.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys, I can't thank you enough for...
Well, I think you need to plug them in now.
Yeah, I'm very nervous. I want to put it off. it makes me nervous. I'm starting to sweat just thinking about it. Yeah.
No, but that's what this is about, furthering the legacy. And I know he would want them to be played. You know, I mean, they're tools. So.
Yeah. Well, man, what a beautiful story and presentation, and so great that it's got all together here.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
It's an honor for us, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And look forward to 2026. Who knows? Somebody might see this video and reach out, and it'll end up on their stage, their performance. Again, covering the bases. People just starting out. People that are excited about doing this and playing music. We're not sitting over here posting up for stadiums. It's all about it continuing to get exposure. And if it ends up playing a small gig for someone in a great environment, and a kid sees it and sticks with music because of it, mission accomplished.
Yeah.
That's
how cool.
You know, just as cool if a stadium performer does.
I'll be in the corner watching closely, you know.
We have a team. Yeah. They travel with it. All bases are covered.
You're like the helicopter parents.
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Borderline handcuffed on the case.
Right. All right, y'all. There it is. Gary Ronson, Collection.